Welcome to the Unstoppable Authors podcast with me, Angeline Trevina.
And me, HB Line. We'll be digging deep into our own experiences and sharing what we've learned along the way to publishing over 15 books between us in 5 years.
We'll share writing tips and tricks for creating immersive worlds and compelling characters for your stories, as well as advice on author life and publishing options.
So get comfy
and grab a cuppa. Let's get started. You've just got me, Angeline, again today, and seeing as we're still at the beginning of the year, I wanted to talk about the big decisions I've made in my publishing career and how and why I made them. So, the general estimate is that we each make around 35,000 decisions each day. No wonder I'm always so tired. That sounds like a lot of work. Of course, most of them are pretty insignificant or even unnoticeable, like which sock to put on first or which plate to use for breakfast. Some are more important, like what to wear that day or whether I can justify having a third cup of coffee before 8 a.m. By the way, the answer to that is yes. I can always justify coffee. And then some decisions are monumental and life-changing. The decision to get married or start a family or move house. And out of those 35,000 decisions we make every single day, we're bound to get some of them wrong. Like when we've taken a swig of sour milk or hung the washing out just before it rains. Of course, the little mistakes might not be too bad, but we choose the wrong path on the big stuff sometimes, and it can cause heartbreak and trauma, or worse, and the effects might stay with us for the rest of our lives. But the great thing about mistakes is that we can learn from them. Of course, it might take a few passes before we really learn, and it often feels like we're just bouncing from one bad decision to another. But then there are times when a mistake can actually lead us on to something fantastic. A happy mistake. I like those. Now, across the broad spectrum of people, there is a sliding scale of planning. At one end of the scale, you have people who find comfort in controlling and micromanaging every moment of their life. They are the planners, the ones who like to know where life is going. They don't like surprises and aren't spontaneous, and they don't make impulsive purchases based on emotion. They're far more likely to follow their heads than their hearts. At the other end of the scale, you have the people making it up as they go along. This is where I exist. Most of my decisions are based on gut reactions and following my heart. I don't like making future plans. I don't even meal plan because how the hell do I know what I'll want to eat next Thursday? But, girls and boys, I do not recommend this way of life, especially if you are running a business. Unfortunately, I have had it drummed into me since childhood that I am scatterbrained, disorganized, and lazy. This is a view that has become so ingrained that it is now how I view myself, and I've been caught in a belief that I cannot change from that. Also, a belief that no good can come from it. We all carry these harmful opinions of ourselves that have been pressed onto us by other people, and they can be very difficult to shed. I am trying to embrace my spontaneity and see the good in it, and I am trying to become more organised and forward-thinking. But it is an ongoing process and struggle at times that I will have to keep working on for the rest of my life. That's just the way things are. We're all a little hard on ourselves, our own worst critics. So wherever you sit on this scale, whether you're a planner or not, you need to embrace it and play to your strengths. But also don't think that you're locked into place. You can move up and down that scale at any time. So what's good about my lack of planning? Well, it means that I can improvise quickly. When I have a situation thrown at me, I can think my way out of it or around it. It also means that I'm flexible and open to change. Some people get very set in their ways, refusing to accept another option or opinion. I am always open to having my mind changed about things, and in a world and an industry when things change quickly, being adaptable to change is a very positive thing. I'm very up for trying out new things, and I never say never. That, I think, is a very positive trait. I also have big ideas, and I'm not scared of throwing myself into them just to see how it works out. I have a really good attitude for failure. If it works, great. If not, then I've learned a valuable lesson. These are all really good traits to have in the indie publishing world. So, if, like me, you're not a planner, and the thought of goals and figures and tracking progress makes you squirm, don't fret, you still have some brilliant qualities that are really going to help you out. Besides, as John Donne wrote, no man is an island. You don't need to do things alone. Work with other people. Find people who complement you with strengths and weaknesses. This might mean outsourcing parts of the business that you can't do or would rather not do. It might mean working with a critique partner or doing a course, hiring a coach, co-writing with another author, or it might just be about building a tribe of like-minded author friends to lean on when you need to. So, let's go down to discussing those big decisions. This is also something that brings me out in a sweat. I'm a Libra, and I'm an incredibly typical one. I'm a total people pleaser, always wanting to keep everyone happy. As a result, I tend to be quite indecisive because, just like my zodiac symbol, the scales, I can see every point of view. I can weigh up both sides of any argument, and I often find that they balance. That makes making decisions quite difficult. Throw in some anxiety, and I can overthink things to the point where I can't think at all anymore. A fog descends, and any hope of clarity is lost. That's when I am glad to not be an island. I have people who compliment me. My husband is down-to-earth, practical, and logical. Everything I'm not. When I overthink, he is my first port of call for talking some sense into me. If he can't help, isn't around, or if it's something that's too publishing-y thing for him to understand, I have my author friends to help me out. Honestly, without other people around me, I would not be able to do this. Now, I've spoken before about how it was never my ambition to become a writer. I've always written stories and been a devout reader, but I never saw myself as an author. For the first 20 years of my life, I wanted to act. I wanted to be on the stage. The decision to publish was a gradual slope, not a sheer cliff. It just kind of came about. I started out in poetry, getting published on some websites and doing some open mic nights. Then I was caught by a vanity publisher and I published a few times with them, buying the books I was published in at full price. That's how they make their money, by tempting naive writers keen to see their name in print. Mistake. Lesson learnt. And then I moved on to short stories. I had my first story published in an anthology in 2011. It was a landmark moment. Even though, looking back at the story now, it was terrible and badly written. But also, it's good because it shows me how much I've developed and improved as a writer. Because writing is a maturing process. No one writes at the start of their career the same way they'll write at the end of it. For one thing, we're different people in ourselves, so how can we write in the same way? In fact, now that I'm thinking about it, most of my big decisions have just kind of come about. Either me saying yes to an opportunity before I can overthink it and talk myself out of it, or me just adapting to a big life change. For example, I became a full-time author in 2014 when my work contract ended and we had to move 200 miles away from home. So, not a decision, just adapting to a change of circumstance. But it did spur me to make a real go of this because I had to. With every book I publish, there are loads of decisions to make. Title decisions, which I hate. Coming up with a title is often harder than writing the damn book. Cover decisions, pen name, real name, dedications, acknowledgements. Do I do paperback, ebook, audiobook, Mac cover, gloss cover, book size, white pages, cream pages, Amazon, Kobo, Nook? I'm sure that publishing a book is around 35,000 decisions in itself. Now, the big debate that rages in the indie community right now is exclusivity versus wide. So, if you decide to place your books into the Kindle Unlimited program, then you are tied into an exclusivity agreement with Amazon. You can't sell that ebook anywhere else. You can't give it away either. So you can't use sites like BookFunnel, Prolific Works, which was previously InstaFreebie, or the new kid on the block Story Origin to give your book away to your mailing list subscribers. But what you do get is all the benefits of the KU program, such as countdown deals, free promo days, lots of hungry KU readers who can get your book for free, and you get paid for page reads. It's a seesaw, basically. You have to weigh up the pros and cons. Most importantly, you have to weigh up the pros and cons for you. KU works better for some books than others and works better with certain publishing strategies. I'm not going to cover everything here because, for one, I'm not an expert, and for another, all the debates you could possibly want can be found online. It's discussed a lot. Do your research and decide what works best for you. Or try out one strategy on some books and another on others. Or give one option a go and then the other. Research, experiment, decide. I am published wide. The reason for this is threefold. One, I don't like having all my eggs in one basket. I really don't. I'm old enough to have been of the MySpace generation. I remember what happened. And if you don't know what MySpace is, well, that proves my point. And we've seen huge companies collapsing in recent years, companies we always imagined were solid and eternal, and they're still falling. So, yeah, having all my income from a single place worries me. Two, my publishing schedule doesn't fit the KU model. It seems to be, and a lot of the advice states, that those who do best in KU are those who publish quickly. Maybe even putting out 10 or even 20 books per year. I don't. I'm currently managing 3 a year. So for that publishing model, wide tends to work better. And 3, I like to be inclusive. I don't want to meet a potential reader and have to tell them they can't read my books because they buy their ebooks from iTunes or from Kobo. I like being accessible to all, and I have had that happen just last month. In fact, and I was happy to be able to tell that potential reader that they could absolutely download my books from iTunes. But those are my reasons. For me, you need to make your own decision based on your reasons. I can't tell you what to do. And going back to what I said earlier about being adaptable, it's important to remember that these decisions don't have to be forever. I know plenty of authors who release all of their books into KU and then switch to wide once their page reads start to dwindle. Because nothing is forever. If you make a decision, you're not bound by it for life. Likewise, if you make a mistake, you can move on. Try again. Try something different. And on that note, I've been making some big decisions for this year, and some have been tough, and some have been things I've just been putting off for too long, and some have been instinctive and natural. The big decision that I've been going back and forth on, bouncing very much between my head and my heart, is what to focus on writing this year. I'm currently finishing up my third book in my Memory Trader series and getting that ready for publication. And then I hit the big what next. I do feel kind of done with my Memory Trader series, which is 3 books and a prequel novella, but as I said, I never say never, and there's a lot of scope to continue it. In fact, I even know what I'd be writing next in that series. The characters have started to come through to me. Plus, I've heard a lot of advice recently about the benefits of writing really deep series, like 10 plus books to a series. So half of me thought I should continue with that. Although, I want to make some changes to the magic and the culture and so forth, but I've already worked out how to work those changes in seamlessly. Basically, it's all ready to go, ready for writing, because I know the world, there's no stumbling around in it, no getting to know it, and no learning curve for me. Creatively, it's a nice, easy, simple option. Business-wise, it's also a sensible option because I'd be deepening the series beyond a trilogy. But, and of course there's a but, I've also been working out the world building and characters for a new series. It's post-apocalyptic urban fantasy kind of mashup. Why would I want to switch to this when continuing my current series is such an obvious option? Well, because my best-selling book, by a long way, is my post-apocalyptic novel, While We Were Waiting. This is quite straight-up post-apoc. It's set in the real world, contemporary to now. It sells so much better than anything else. But it's totally a standalone. It has a companion book of short stories, but I have tried and tried to think if there's a sequel to it, and I just can't come up with it. So the option to extend that into a series just isn't really plausible. But with it being my best-selling book, it makes sense to write more post-apoc. Of course it does. So that takes me back to this post-apoc urban fantasy mashup. But will urban fantasy post-apoc sell as well as my straight-up one? Is that popular because it's set in the real world? So now I'm thinking, how much can I pull this new idea back to a contemporary recognisable world? Yeah, I could do that. Can I totally abandon fantasy elements altogether? Not a chance. But While We Were Waiting has monsters in it, so it's not a deal breaker with my readers at all. So I can just nudge this idea more towards the real world than a secondary fantasy world. Yeah, I can do that. That's easy enough. Just a gentle nudge. But, and of course there's a but. Again, this is a brand new series with no other books in it, which means starting from scratch. And it comes with the added pressure to get it written and published as quickly as possible. And it means moving further away from having a deep, deep series. Hence why I've been back and forth and back and forth, wrestling between my head and my heart. And every time I think I finally decided, I change my mind again. Honestly, at the start of this podcast, I had actually decided. But now I'm here, having talked about both options, I'm undecided again. So seriously, if you know the answer, let me know. Seriously, please. And the other big thing that's happening this year is that I'm launching a new pen name. Now, this is something I've been putting off for a long time, but it's finally time. Finally. I've been putting it off because the thought of managing 2 websites, 2 mailing lists, and 2 lots of social media just fills me with terror. But I've had some advice from other authors already doing it, and I've thought about what's manageable for me, and I think I can do this. I think I've found my happy medium. So, yeah, this is the year to do it, at last. And honestly, the decision has brought with it so many other decisions that I think I've worn out the small capacity that I have for decision making, which is probably why I am still undecided on what to write next under my current name. Ugh, Send Help or Cake, which is just as good, really. Choosing a pen name is one where I did let my heart lead. I know that some people do this really strategically, looking at other authors in their genre, thinking about something that matches the genre, or a surname that places them next to a particular author alphabetically. I wanted my pen name to mean something, to be important and special personally, so it's a mashup of my 2 late grandmothers' names, and I'd like to think that it would make them proud. Although the genre I'll be writing under their names is paranormal romance. I've laughed with some people about how they might feel about that. And it's funny, actually, because I said that my maternal grandmother, well, she was pretty straight-laced and read a lot of Catherine Cookson. So, maybe not. But my paternal grandmother was an actress and an author too, actually, and she was a flamboyant, outspoken woman, so I thought I'd totally have her backing on this. But when I mentioned it to my parents, my dad told me that she had once fallen out with a fellow author who had started writing romance just for the money. She used to rant on about him selling out, apparently, so perhaps she wouldn't be so proud after all. No, I'm sure they're both very flattered at the dedication. And I've also decided to use this pen name to explore a totally different publishing strategy. Basically, the opposite of what I'm currently doing, because eggs, baskets, experimenting, trying new things and all that. So I'll be releasing as fast as I can, ebooks only, and putting them all into KU. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens, actually. And while I spoke about all of my reasons why I originally chose to publish wide, I don't see this as any kind of betrayal of my core values. It's not going against who I am. It's embracing my core belief of never saying never, of adapting and trying new things. So if you're making any big decisions this year, or if you'd like to help me out with mine, please, then drop us a message on social media. Just search for Unstoppable Authors on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more writing and publishing tips and tricks.
You can find us in all the usual places. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and the show notes are at unstoppableauthors.com.
On our website, you can also find the link to join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors so you never miss an episode, and we will have more goodies for you soon.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe and please leave a review.